Welcome to the Financial Bees Podcast, the practice owner's guide to maximize practice value and create personal financial success. Your host, Eric Miller, is the co-owner and chief advisor at Econologix Financial Advisors. He is also a national speaker and published author in financial matters focused on practice owners at every phase of ownership.
All right. Welcome to the Financial Bees Podcast for Veterinarians. This is where we're showing veterinary owners how to make sure you're utilizing the power of your practice, building personal wealth, and go out the top of your game. I am your host, Eric Miller, and I'm here with
Eric Gersh.
And we're going to talk about like probably one of the most boring topics that you possibly can talk about.
Because estate planning.
Why is this so boring?
Because nobody wants to think about what is going to happen to their stuff when they die.
That's true. So, yeah. So I think on this, we got to kind of set expectations here. Number one, we're not attorneys.
Agree.
Right.
Definitely not an attorney.
We're not estate planning attorneys. So don't construe this as estate planning advice about what we're about to tell you. But I can tell you that when we get an owner as a client and we look like we have like an assessment that shows like the different areas and how well they're doing in certain areas and like how well they're doing in their taxes, how well they're doing on their retirement savings, how well they're doing on,
debt.
When we get to the estate plan one,
that's consistently at the bottom.
Yeah. That one usually craters. And I've been trying for a long time to figure out like why it is that people don't want to confront their estate plan. And I guess to define it, I mean, all it is we're trying to fit that you have stuff, which is your estate. Yeah.
Yeah.
At some point you and your spouse are going to die. What happens to your stuff when you die? And if you should become disabled or can't function, who is making decisions for you? That's basically what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
It's a map. It's a direction of what's going to happen to your stuff and how's it going to transition over to the next generation and how you want to do that. Right.
Yeah. And it's basically your directions. Because if you don't leave directions, it's going to be up to state law.
Which is the next thing we can talk about, which is what's the penalty if you don't really do anything with your estate plan? Well, the penalty is that your stuff goes directly through a probate court, which is just a part of our judicial system that handles this area of life, you know, because people die and people have stuff. And then how does that stuff get retitled to whoever the people designated or didn't designate where their stuff should go? And if you don't have any designations or something that explains that, then it goes through a probate court, right? And probate court's really simple. Somebody dies, okay? The judge, there's a probate court that's open at that point in time. And then the proceedings occur. And, you know, obviously the downside of probate court is, you know, it probably takes, depending on how big your estate is, forever.
Yeah, it takes forever. And there's a charge for it.
Yeah, there's a pretty significant charge for it, depending on how much money that you have. So I think all we want to do is just make sure you guys know, hey, what are some of the basic documents that you need? So we'll go over that in today's podcast. And you know, try to create some necessity in you to actually go get this done. This is all done through an attorney. All right. So, I mean, now you can go online and do it, but still, I mean, even an attorney then drafted up those things.
Yeah.
But it really is, you have to go to an estate planning attorney. Most of you should have somebody like that in your community, or you should, if you've ever dealt with an attorney, they run in circles. They probably know an estate planning attorney. So the first thing I would do is like say, hey, I need to get a referral for an estate planning attorney, right? Because they're going to handle all this stuff for you, right?
Yeah, estate documents are legal documents.
There you go. They're legal documents. So They're going to handle all of that. You just have to give them direction and names and all of those things as we go through that. So, okay. So let's start with the most basic estate planning document, which is a last will and testament. So, okay. So somebody dies, the state court opens, judge looks at this on his docket and sees that this person died. First thing he's going to ask for.
A will,
right? He's just going to ask for a will. Was there a will in place? And if you didn't have a will, then you would have been deemed to died intestate. And at that point in time, they're going to make the decisions on all the assets and where all your stuff goes. And you're just taking, I guess, legal precedent over what that state determines who should be getting your stuff.
Yep.
You know, that's as simple as that. So,
yeah, I mean, a will is really probably your most basic estate doc. You're going to designate who gets your real estate, who gets your cash, if you want money to go to a charity. But more importantly than all of that, and this is often forgotten about, is who's going to take custody of your kids.
Ooh, yeah, that's
good. Other parent isn't around.
Yeah. So that's really important, because I think most people think that if you have younger children and you die without a will, and let's say that the other spouse isn't around, let's say both spouses died in a crash, you would think that your next of kin would be able to get the kids.
And they will eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually is the key word, though.
Yeah. So, but if you don't, the first thing they do is they become wards of the state, right? So the state actually takes over the care.
Yep.
For that period of time. I don't know how long that is. You know, I'm sure it varies.
I'm sure there's horror stories out there.
Yeah. So, but a will would help bypass that, because you would have named guardians to the kid, to the children, right? So if you guys do not have a will and you have younger kids, or if you don't, or if you know someone that has young kids and does not have a will, make sure they go get a will. I mean, you can go online and get one, honestly.
You can go to LegalZoom or any one of those websites. And gosh, I think a will is like $60 or $80.
It's not much.
I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that, but it's not much.
It's not much. Like, it's really simple to go get something like that. So you guys should definitely do that. I think that's probably the most important reason why, is if you got younger kids, you know, and you love them, then you would want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, most people are very surprised to find out that without a will, the whole kid thing. I mean, it's amazing how many people are like, I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And like I said, this is just part of, you know, why doesn't some of this stuff get done? Because, you know, these terms are confusing. Like, what do these things mean?
I think the terms are confusing. Hiring an attorney seems like a big, you know, mountain to climb. And then I think over and above all is just, as humans, we're good at thinking, oh, it won't, I've got decades left. I can get to that next month, next year. It's not a big deal. But it's not a big deal until it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I've dealt with that personally. So,
yeah, I think the last 3 years taught a lot of people that, you know, human life is pretty delicate, and, you know, anything can happen that can cause, you know, accidents, illnesses, diseases, whatever it would be. So I think that's the first thing you would need to do. Okay. So I got my last will and testament. What else do I need? What's another document that I'm going to need?
I think another important document is your healthcare directive.
Yeah. So is that the power of attorney for healthcare?
So the healthcare directive just designates who gets to make healthcare decisions on your behalf if you're in a coma or you're incapacitated.
Yep. So think about that. I mean, that's a real thing. I mean, people that get sick and you're in a coma, who's going to make healthcare decisions for you?
Yeah. And logically you're going to think it's your spouse, but what if your spouse and your parents have differing ideas and there's no document? Now it's probably going to end up in court.
Yeah. So, and all this can be avoided with one document, because I don't think it's not very big document.
No, it's like 2 pages.
Yeah. It's 2 pages. that basically says, I want blank to make decisions for me.
Yeah. Right? It's that simple.
It can be anybody you want to, you know, I mean, if you have another healthcare professional that is a friend or something like that, that, you know, you want, you trust their judgment, then do that.
Yeah. I bring that up a lot. I think I actually got that from you, but designating another friend or, you know, if you have a close family member or cousin who's a doctor, you know, because if you're incapacitated, your spouse, as logical as they may be most days, they're going to struggle to make the right decision because of all the emotion attached versus, you know, a friend or a first, second cousin who is able to look big picture a little more honestly under pressure.
Yeah. Someone comes in there that loves you and sees you like in a vegetative state, can't move, you know, and they're going to be like attached to you. And they're going to be like, no, I don't want him to go. You know, I want him to stay. So it's one of those things that you have to definitely, I think it'd be better to have someone that isn't super, I mean, obviously can think logically.
Yep.
In that scenario. Okay. So so you're basically giving someone a power of attorney, which basically means that you're giving them, the right to make decisions for you. And the reason that and you'll hear this document called durable power of attorney for healthcare,
yep,
which is the same thing as healthcare directive. It's durable because it means that it is only active while you are incapacitated. The moment that you become like,
yeah, you wake up
conscious again. All right. They don't have power of attorney anymore.
Yeah. Now you have the say again.
Yep. The other power of attorney document, that would be something that would be necessary would be to make financial decisions. As
yes.
Well.
Financial and legal. Legal.
Right.
Yep.
So you're also going to have to name someone as a power of attorney for financial and legal matters. So again, I think in most people, this is their spouse. So this is giving someone the right to write checks to what else? To get loans.
Yeah. If you're in the hospital incapacitated, unfortunately, your mortgage is still due. Your light bill is still due. Your loans still have to get paid. So if money is in an account in your name only, how is your spouse going to get to it? Or how is someone going to get to it to pay those bills?
Yeah. Yeah. Who's going to do that?
So
you definitely need to make sure that you designate someone to do that as well.
Yes.
And again, this is the hard part is people are trying to designate. I don't have anybody. Like my siblings are train wrecks. I don't trust any of my friends. You know, it's like, I think this is part and parcel of why some people can't get these documents done. Cause they don't know who to designate.
Yeah.
You know, you just need to find one person. Sorry.
One.
Yeah. Like if you can't find one person to do that.
If you can, I mean, who are you surrounding yourself with?
I was going to say, you may have some like.
there might be some deeper issues.
You may want to evaluate your decision-making process when it comes to friends and such. Okay. So I got my will. I got my powers of attorney for healthcare and for legal and financial matters. Good.
Yep.
So I think there's one more, which is a
living will.
A living will.
Yep.
And that just designates end of life scenarios, right? So basically, how do you want to be treated at the end of life? Interestingly enough, remember, you know, that actor, Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
Right. That guy that got,
he got hit by the snowplow or something.
Yeah, I just was watching this yesterday with him and, you know, he did not have any estate plan documents. You know, I knew that is because when he was semi-conscious, he was writing down on a piece of paper, like, if I'm a vegetable, don't let me live, you know. If I'm going to be like crippled for the rest of my life, you know, I don't want to go on. He was writing all this stuff down, scribbling it while, you know, in points of when he regained consciousness, you know what I mean?
Jeez, that's dark.
It's totally dark, right? You may not have that opportunity.
Yeah, no.
You know, so if you're worried at all about like end of life scenarios, which again, I know no one wants to confront this stuff and it's, you know, morbid and it's, but like, just have it like, hey, if I'm unresponsive, I don't need to be, you know, don't keep me on life support forever. You know, you don't need to drug me. You don't need to give me electric shocks all the time. I don't want all this stuff. So the only way that you're going to be able to dictate that to the medical institution is if you have a living will. And that is what I think it's one of the most important documents that you can have as well.
Yep.
So, okay. Those I think are the basics right there.
Yeah. Those are your basics, but yeah. we got one more.
Yeah.
This is the complicated part.
And it really isn't like overly complex because, you know, those other documents we just talked about are definitely necessary. But if you want to help like avoid a lot of the things that you hear when it comes to what happens with families when someone dies.
Fighting,
battling over who gets what, yep, and all that, then you would be best advised to probably look at something called a trust.
Yep.
Right. And a trust is just a legal document as well.
Yep.
Right. And it is used by families to transfer assets. And not that there's ever been people that haven't contested trusts, but I think it's probably a little bit more difficult because you can be very specific in your language as far as who you want assets to go to.
Oh yeah, that's a much steeper mountain to climb.
Yeah, than fighting probate court, right? So a trust is simply a legal document as well. Like I have a trust, and there are three parties to a trust. You have somebody called the grantor. The grantor.
The grantor.
Yeah. Yep. That's someone that actually is granting the trust. You have a trustee, which is someone that oversees.
Manages the assets
of the trust. Then you have the beneficiary.
Yep. That's who gets the money.
Yes. Who gets the money. And there's two types. There are revocable and irrevocable. So let's start with revocable. That's probably the most popular one. Most people have what's called a living trust. And this is simply, so let's talk about this. So I have a house.
Okay.
All right. And, I put the title of my house now as my living trust. Okay.
Okay.
Great. So then if I die, does that house go through the probate process?
No, it's already inside of the trust.
Exactly. So, but let's say that I own another piece of property that I did not put in my trust name. Would that go through probate process?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So trust is only as good as assets that are titled in the trust.
Yeah. You have to, you don't just get the trust. You have to retitle stuff after, whether that's retitling owners or beneficiaries, that's up to your attorney.
Yep.
But yeah, that's a two-step process.
Yeah. It's pretty detailed, you know, but the use of the trust obviously is that number one, it's going to avoid the probate process now, because now it's really simple. It's laid out in your trust and this is where the assets are going to go. All right. Simple as that. And, you know, so it avoids the cost, which by the way, I think is 5 to 7%.
Jeez.
Yeah. So think about that. And that, and, you know, cause when you start adding life insurance into people's estate, you know, which is part of your estate when you die.
Oh yeah.
You know, think about, you know, the probate process could cost 5 to 7%. So if you got like a $3 million estate.
Yeah. Which happens quickly.
Most veterinary owners have. It's 150 grand.
Oh yeah.
You know? So this is the purpose of getting some kind of a trust. So you can put assets in there. So what else would go into a trust?
Brokerage accounts, bank accounts, real estate,
Business interests. You can put into a trust.
Potentially. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, anything you can put into the trust, and it kind of serves as the umbrella. So I create this trust and I just want to get as many assets as I have under the umbrella of this trust. And I'm sure there's different language that you can put into the so that assets transfer into the trust. I'll let the attorneys figure that out.
Yeah, there's a I think it's called a pour over will.
Yeah.
Where anything that you forget about gets added to the trust at death.
So there's
to catch all.
Yeah. So there's stuff that you can do to make sure that stuff that everything gets put in your trust. Okay. So, but that's now, let's say that I put a bank account that I own personally into my trust name. Do I still control that bank account?
Of course. Yeah.
Can I still take money out of the bank account?
Yep.
Yeah. I still have complete control over the any asset that I have.
Yeah. It's not going to change your functionality day to day while you're alive.
Yeah. So it just allows you to maximize your estate tax exemptions. It allows you to transfer assets privately, because if you die with in probate court, all that's public record.
Correct.
So that's why you don't know how much the Rockefellers or the Kennedys or anybody like that actually have, because all their assets transfer in trusts.
Yep. Keep it secret.
Yep. I mean, what else is there? So, I mean, I guess the downside is the cost.
Yep.
But what's the cost?
Probably $2,000, $3,000, yeah. Maybe.
I mean, I've seen it, you know, $2,000 to $5,000. I mean, that seems like a pretty high amount.
Yeah.
But it's not ridiculous.
No, and it's something, I mean, most people are going to create a trust one time their whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. You may need to update certain things. You know, life changes. You may need to update, you know, go have a meeting with your attorney, but it's not going to cost you $5,000 every time you do something like that.
Yeah. And that's the nice thing about a revocable trust is all of the terms, all of the assets added to it, everything can be revoked or changed at any point in time.
Yeah. So it's not set in stone.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are some things that every one of you can do to help protect your assets. Now, I will say this. A lot of people think that once they put their assets in a trust, they automatically think that if they got sued for some reason, especially a revocable trust, no. I got all my assets in a revocable trust and, you know, I just got sued for $1 million. None of that money is exposed.
Generally not true.
Yeah, that's generally not true. So don't think the trust protects you from a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's not really meant to be an asset protection vehicle. I don't want to speak wrong, but I think there's some states that do grant additional asset protection to trusts, but as a whole, it's not an asset protection strategy. It's an estate planning strategy.
Exactly. Yeah. We're trying to minimize the effects of the estate plan and estate taxes as well. Now, estate taxes are another thing, you know, I mean, right now the exemptions are $25 million or something like that.
Yeah, for a married couple, it's close to 25.
So I love our veterinary owners, but very few of them have net worths of over $25 million at this point in time.
Yeah, so, you don't see that much.
I'm not overly concerned about that. And there's things that we can do, you know, to minimize the estate tax on that one.
But it could drop.
It could drop. Yeah. So if that's the case, then, you know, you guys are we're gonna have to do some advanced estate tax issue techniques. And again, your attorneys should be able to help you with that, how sophisticated that you want to get. Now, the other type of trust is the irrevocable trust.
Yep.
Which is just like you would think, if a revocable is something I can change, and irrevocable is something that technically
I can't.
Yep. Right. So irrevocable trusts are then types of trust that you create where basically you're taking an asset and saying, I, in the eyes of the law, no longer own this asset personally. The trust owns the asset.
Yep.
Right. And it is governed by the rules of the trust. And it is now out of my estate completely.
And the rules of the trust cannot be changed.
Yes. So you better make sure when you do that you are doing it for a very specific reason. Most people do that for asset protection purposes, because if I take an asset out of my estate and put it in the name of the trust and I got sued, they can't take the asset.
Yeah. Because we were just talking about this, but I want to make sure to expand that there is a big difference in asset protection from revocable to irrevocable trusts.
Yes. Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Now, you still may get an income stream from that. You can still, you know, take income out
because at a fixed, at predetermined.
At a fixed amount.
Yeah.
But I've seen people do that. Why not? I take, put $5 million in an irrevocable trust, and then I'll take $250,000 out a year, and I don't have to worry about anything else. I mean, you can totally do that. But that $5 million is essentially out of your estate.
Yep.
At that point, you can't go back and say, oh, I want it back.
Yeah. You can't wake up next year and say, yeah, 250 is not quite enough. I think we need 300,000 a year. Nope.
Yeah.
Can't change it. Not going to happen. You're stuck.
Yeah. You're definitely stuck. Now that is used for a number of reasons. I think mostly it's done for asset protection and estate tax purposes of why you would get an irrevocable trust. So, again, we get into that. That's getting into way advanced.
Yeah. Most veterinary owners aren't going to need a irrevocable trust, but it is something to know about
because
there's a small sliver who will.
Yeah. There's some of you that may end up using one for like an estate tax purpose or something like that. Or if you want to leave like a life insurance policy to the kids, you know, you can put it in an irrevocable trust. So it's not, you know, it doesn't count as your part of your estate. I mean, there's a number of uses for it. But I think those are all the documents and things that you would probably need, right?
Yeah, I think that covers most everything. I'm trying to think if there's really anything else.
Well, there's that one thing too. If you have a kid that's 18 years old going to school, isn't there some kind of, you make sure they get some kind of HIPAA form that is signed so that you can, so let's say a kid goes to college.
Okay.
Right. And they get into an accident and they're at the hospital. They would have having to give the parent the right to make decisions. So I think there's some kind of a HIPAA form that a child, someone of 18 needs to sign so they can designate their parents to be able to make healthcare decisions for them. Because when they're 18, they're adults.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So I can't remember the exact name of it, but you guys can look it up. And if you have kids going to college, I think most of the time when kids go to college, they probably have that form for the parents, but just recognize that once that kid's an adult, is 18 years old, they need to have some of those basic documents in place as well. So that's also, I think, an important thing. Other than that, we did 27 minutes on estate planning. I guess that's
pretty impressive.
That's not bad. I hope that helped. I think we tried to be as clear as possible. Don't get overwhelmed by it. Make sure you guys find someone that is preferably local that can sit down with you and really help you make, you know, choices on who to designate, you know, what assets need to be put in there into different trusts and accounts. But just get it done. And once you're done, you're going to feel a heck of a lot better that you took some responsibility for this. So that's estate planning basics. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys on the next podcast.
You have been listening to the Financial Beast podcast, where we talk about how to turn practice profits into personal financial wealth. For more information on how to become a financial beast in practice ownership, visit financialbeastpodcast.com. You may also want to call the office at 727-588-1540 to request more information on becoming a client or arrange to have Eric speak at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or financialbeastpodcast.com.